Well, welcome to day two of the June panel of the Court of Appeals. To my right is John Irwin from Papillion, and to my left, Rhett Inbody from Wahoo, and I'm Francie Reedman from Gretna. We have three cases today on our in our session. Some of them involve children or other confidential and personal information. I would just remind counsel that these are broadcast live and they are also archived. So in order to maintain that confidentiality and privacy, if you want to use initials or just first names, please do so. Because they are recorded, we're required to repeat the name of the case. So I'll say it two times because that's what they tell me to do. So with that, we will start with our first case, State versus Richter. State versus Richter. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
My name is Joe Howard. I'm an attorney with the law firm of Dorn and Lusgard in Troya, and I represent the appellant, Mr. Richter. If possible, I'd like to reserve maybe 4 minutes for rebuttal, if that's permissible.
Yes.
Thank you. On behalf of my client, we have brought an appeal to your court, and we have alleged 9 assignments of error. So that's quite a bit to talk about in 10 minutes. So maybe the most beneficial thing for my client would be for me to focus in on a couple of those assignments of error. But please, again, stop me if there's something you'd prefer for me to address. My first assignment of error, I think, is very important. Normally, excessive sentences, the arguments really don't go very far, having done a number of those in the past. But this case is quite different. And it's quite different because of a number of different variables that came about in this trial. Actually, there were 2 trials. The first was a hung jury. And looking at the evidence and the weight of the evidence, and the type of evidence that was elicited from the 3 alleged victims in this case, the evidence is contradictory. There's memory gaps. There's a lot of problems with the evidence. And I've concentrated my brief to really explore the nuances of the testimony. With child sexual assault cases, the courts are dealing with a completely different ballgame than adult witnesses. With cherub victims, there's a credibility factor that almost outweighs reason and logic, and many times jurors are emotionally driven. And so what I've tried to do in this brief is really accentuate the problems with the evidence. The children couldn't remember. They couldn't honestly testify. Their testimonies were contradictory. And the evidence was almost unbelievable. I could go through the whole fact pattern, but the assignment of error here is the excessive sentence. And so if you would, spend some time with the Bill of Exceptions. I've gone through and outlined extensive portions of the problems with the evidence. The district court committed error in that not only was the evidence insufficient to mandate a 93% maximum sentence in this case, but the information that was provided to the court in the PSI, it really doesn't support a 93% maximum sentence. You're probably looking at me saying, what do you mean by 93%? Well, in this case, Mr. Richter was convicted on 3 counts of third-degree sexual assault on a child. Each comes with a max of 5 years, and so he got 56 to 60 months on each count to run consecutively. And so doing the math, that's a 93% maximum sentence, which is really not supported by the information which was provided to the court. I beg you to find a better PSI. This gentleman has spent his entire life teaching students. He has a bachelor's degree. He's got a master's degree. He's got a loving family. He's got two boys, one of whom has a neurological disease. His body is riddled with cells that at any minute could turn into tumors. He's had a number of tumor surgeries to remove these tumors. He's been there for his family. Looking at the PSI, he has been a law-abiding citizen all of his life. He has no criminal history. The nature of the offense, again, I concentrated on what the child alleged victims had testified to. One of them had testified that this teacher, this advanced placement teacher, would touch him when he would go up to the teacher to show him his paper. And maybe I don't need to go through all the factual history.
Yeah, I think we know the facts.
Okay, then I won't concentrate on that, but it's just bizarre. It's just bizarre that a teacher would turn a student around and touch him over his pants in front of the entire class, and do this so frequently. However, no one in the class would have seen that happen.
Wasn't the explanation for that, though, he only did it during the math class because the other students, and there were not very many of them, were all intent on looking down at their worksheets and solving their own problems.
Well, that was one of the students' explanation to the court, or to the question. And that came after not only the interview at Project Harmony, but a number of depositions, a deposition and the first trial testimony. And what I'm alluding to is that's a huge question as to why it wouldn't have been seen. And it seems as though that's just a reactionary excuse by the student. That in itself doesn't make much sense. I mean, if this happened as frequently as these children say, if it happened every single day, you know, wouldn't someone have seen something? And wouldn't they have... Why would a teacher do that in front of the entire class? And why would he not tell anybody to be quiet or to keep it secret? It's just, it doesn't fit logic.
We also have, though, the issue of the former student who came in and testified as to similar events happening to him years ago.
Yeah, and that was very odd as well. And I think, and this is my speculation, I think that he had misinterpreted those touches. That student had come up, was in line with a number of other students. Okay, so there are other students in line. And my client sat at his desk reviewing the child's paper and would reach over, and as the person testified, it seemed as though there was a disconnect between what the man himself was doing and what his hand was doing. He wasn't looking where he was putting his hand. He just placed it on the child's buttocks. And the child brought that to his mother's attention. And the mother it was brought to my client's attention, and he apologized. He felt really bad that he had made the child feel uncomfortable. And there was no problem after that. The issue of sexual gratification is an element of the crime. And I think through all of this, I don't think that the state presented evidence of any type of sexual gratification to support the conviction. That student, again, grew up, taught with my client in the same school, never said anything about it. And then when he was in his teenage years, he was selling, I believe it was knives door to door, and he called my client and said, "Can I come over and try to sell you some knives?" And it just doesn't fit the idea of a sexual assault versus an incidental touching of maybe a gentle person. It just doesn't fit. And looking at this, Your Honors, now 15 or 93% maximum sentence for someone who has no criminal history, who's been a law-abiding citizen all of his life, who never touched these kids under their clothes, that the touches were seconds in length. And the touchings were all somewhat dissimilar. Very low risk criminal history. Very low risk. You know, everything here, even the actuarial instruments to determine whether or not he's a risk to society. Again, we're looking at very low risk. I'm asking the court to do two things here today. One is to modify this sentence, and then two, to review my extensive brief and remand this case for a new trial. Thank you. I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time.
Thank you. Ms. Vincent?
May it please the court, my name is Melissa Vincent. I'm an assistant attorney general, and I represent the appellee, the state of Nebraska. Richter has raised several issues on appeal. I believe most of those have been adequately argued in the brief. I don't intend to reiterate all of those arguments here. I would just like to make a couple of points regarding the cross-examination issue. First, to the extent that Richter claims that his right to confrontation was violated, that claim was not presented to the district court and therefore is not properly before this court. Second, it's undisputed that any evidence concerning the prior physical abuse was properly excluded. Consequently, the only question presented here is whether Richter should have been allowed to ask if LD had lied during a previous interview at Project Harmony. The answer is no. As the district court correctly noted, Richter's reference to Project Harmony necessarily implied that LD had been previously abused, and since the prior abuse itself was off limits, so was any reference to Project Harmony. That limitation made perfect sense. And some support for the district court's rationale can be found in State v. Schreiner, which is cited on page 2 of the state's brief. It's a Nebraska Supreme Court case from 2008. And while it's not directly on point, it is sufficiently analogous to be instructive. Finally, it bears noting that Richter was allowed to extract from LD the one admission that mattered, namely that LD had been lied about being hurt by someone on a prior occasion. And as it turns out, that may have been a bigger concession than was warranted by the underlying facts. It's apparent from discussions on the record that LD actually believed his father had caused the bruises, but turned out to be wrong. And that being the case, any extended discussion about the prior abuse, which allowed LD to explain the situation, would have diluted or, if not destroyed, the admission. So even if the district court erred in limiting Richter's cross-examination of LD, he certainly was not prejudiced by it. As for the remaining issues, unless the court has questions, I'll just submit those on the brief.
Can you just address briefly counsel's primary argument here today about the excessiveness of the sentence given the lack of any prior criminal history?
Sure. Well, I think it's apparent from the record that the district court considered all of the appropriate factors, the statutory factors, all the information included in the PSR, and the court rested its decision in part on the fact that given his age and his failure to accept any responsibility, that he wasn't likely to be rehabilitated, but also the court focused on the seriousness of the offense, and which included multiple victims, and of course you have the abuse of trust inherent in his commission, given the fact that he was their teacher, was in a position of authority, and abused their trust. And I think there was also some additional information in the PSR, although I must admit it's been several months since I've looked at it, from at least one of the children's mother that talked about the emotional trauma, the need for therapy, and the kid still gets upset every time they even drive by Project Harmony. So I think all of those things factored into the district court's decision, and I would also note that the district court in this particular case has been a trial judge for, I believe, approximately 6 years, but was a prosecutor for several years before that, probably a good 20 years before that. And just, I think she's seen her fair share of these kinds of cases, so I don't believe it was an abuse of discretion.
Thanks.
We would ask that you affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Counsel, if we was to buy in with you that the sentence is excessive, how would we write that?
I'm sorry?
We were to buy in with you that the sentence is excessive based upon current state of case law. How would we write that? How would we find that that's excessive?
Well, two ways. One, the court abuses discretion by not taking into full consideration the weight of the evidence. We have case law cited in my brief that addresses that. Two, the court did not properly consider whether or not this case would be appropriate for probation. She did not weigh the factors in State v. Huff
How do we know that? Because she says she considered these things.
She did. She never made a finding on the record.
Did you ask her to?
I did not, Judge.
What did trial counsel?
I was trial counsel.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Case is submitted and counsel is excused.